director. Is that actually true? Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm here four times a week with great guests talking about highly interesting topics. And today we're going to be covering the conspiracies behind the deaths of rock stars. Wait a minute, you say. Isn't that one of those, like, Elvis riding the dinosaurs on Mars kind of conspiracy theories? Well, maybe not. It actually seems that there is a fair bit of reasonably quality evidence showing that a number of cultural leaders, people in the sort of political and cultural avant-garde who had a huge audience thanks to their popularity in popular culture, may have been taken out by the same people who took out the Kennedys, Dr. King, and other leaders of the political and cultural avant-garde in politics. If that sounds too strange, just look at it from the bad guy's point of view. Why should they allow huge numbers, millions and millions of young people to be stampeded into becoming peaceniks by guys like John Lennon, Bob Marley, and others? And since it's Bob Marley's anniversary of being shot before he was assassinated, perhaps with a cancer weapon in the boot is what we think, he was shot in a political shooting that was intended to stop him from doing a political concert, and that happened on December 3rd of, what year was that? Well, we're going to have to, I think it was 1976, somewhere back in the 70s anyway. I can't remember that era. I was having too much fun. But fortunately, my guest, Ole Damegaard, has a very good wealth of information on all of this, and he'll help clarify that issue. Well, hey, welcome, Ole. It's good to have you back.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Good to be back.
It's fascinating that you found that these same what do we call them? Serial killers who went after the Kennedys, Dr. King, and other political figures apparently also targeted rock singers. Why would they do that?
The thing is, all people, or very many of the the people that have been taken out over the years have been people that have stand up and spoken out for peace, which is a big problem for the military-industrial complex and these other world elite groups, where war is one of the major things on their agenda. So this is why everyone who's been really standing up and who's been listened to has become a threat to this group, and that's why they have conspired to take them out, and sometimes they've actually done it as well in quite violent ways.
It's easy to understand why they took out John F. Kennedy. In fact, it's kind of surprising that he lasted as long as he did, given the kind of enemies he was making, the kind of decisions he was making, trying to go after the Federal Reserve by printing real U.S. currency, shutting down the Cold War, which means shutting down the military-industrial complex, making peace with Castro, working towards complete disarmament, not just nuclear disarmament, and last but not least, trying to shut down the Israeli nuclear program, and going after organized crime. First time in history that any American administration seriously went after organized crime. Before the Kennedys, we were being assured by J. Edgar Hoover that there was no such thing as organized crime in America. And Hoover was saying that because the head of organized crime in America, Meyer Lansky, had dirty pictures of Hoover that he was using to blackmail him. So it's easy to see why they went after JFK. And then they would, of course, have to go after Robert when he was running in 68 to make sure he didn't win the election and reopen the case. Dr. King was also on the brink of creating a mass movement against the Vietnam War. These people, these political figures, you can really see why the powers that be would take them out. But someone like Bob Marley, why would they have to kill Bob Marley?
I think many people see Bob Marley as somebody sitting smoking a spliff in a corner of a rock club, a smoky rock club. But he was a highly, highly political person, very, very brave person who was standing up for the rights of people and who became a person with massive impact on especially the black population. Many people think that he was big on Jamaica, which he was. Major, but he was also a very big name in Africa, and he was starting a movement there, which was getting out of control of the elite, and he was one of the big people in Zimbabwe. He was also in Gabon, and he was just like you say, he was shot at. This is the thing that most. Many are aware of that. They tried to assassinate him on an early stage, both him and Peter Tosh, which was one of the musicians he used to play with and who later became a solo artist with very, very straightforward texts exposing these powers.
Yeah, I remember his big hits, Get Up, Stand Up for Your Rights, and Legalize It.
Yeah, and also Peter Tosh, he was actually killed in the end. He was assassinated along with some other people in his home. But Bob Marley was also being shot at. He was wounded as well as other people in his group just before one of these big concerts where he was trying to unite the whole Jamaican situation where they were into a big, big conflict. And I think when this group saw the power of Bob Marley, that the courage this man had, because he was, even though he had been shot, he still went to this peace concert. They arranged for a massive peace concert. And he went up on stage, even though he knew that he might have been shot down by a sniper or anything. Nobody knew what would happen. He went up there, he went through the whole concert, and he got both the leaders of the two conflicting parties up on stage, shaking hands and so on. And also in one of the concerts in Zimbabwe, that was just after it had been changed in from Rhodesia to Zimbabwe, the whole area was shot at with tear gas grenades and stuff, because they say that there's a lot of people that came to the crowd and made too many people in the arena, so they tried to open up the whole area with tear gas and so on. And the only one that stayed on stage all the time with tear gas, everything flying, was Bob Marley, because he was a true revolutionary at heart. You know, he was not a smokehead that was just, like he was very, very aware. And he was also aware of the magnitude of the powers that he was opposing, that he was standing up against. So he, as many of the other people we're going to talk about, knew that he was targeted and that he might not live as long as he did.
He reminds me a little bit of Malcolm X in that both Malcolm X and Bob Marley were very, very spiritually energized by their particular spiritual path. Both of them united black nationalists, as sort of people of color rising up against oppression with a significant segment of the whole global population. You know, their appeal was not just limited to any country or any hemisphere, but Malcolm X and Bob Marley both had a profound global influence that tended to unite the oppressed third world people and people of color against their oppressors. And I think that that's what people miss maybe when they are skeptical about, you know, why would anybody want to take out Bob Marley? They, you know, Bob Marley was big in the U.S., but he was a revolutionary icon at the global scale, and many Americans miss that.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's there's a very good documentary called Marley that describes his life and also shows these sides of him, which I think is very important, because that was what finally had was the reason why he was taken out, as far as I can see. And also he was not a black man. He had a white father and a black mother. And he was actually like a bit of an outcast on Jamaica because of this. He didn't fit in with the white, he didn't fit in with the black. But that made him grow up to a very, very strong young man that knew exactly what he wanted to do. And he was very, very focused on his attempt on uniting people. He said, I am a very simple man with a very simple wish. I just want to unite mankind. And that was what he really tried to do. And this global power that he was standing up against, and that I and many other, like yourself, I would say, are trying to expose, their agenda is totally the opposite. They want to sort of totally control and crush mankind in many ways.
I agree. So how about that? The story of how he may have been assassinated with a kind of cancer weapon in his boot. The story I've heard is that he was given a pair of boots as a gift by Carl Colby, who I believe was the son, possibly the nephew, I think it was the son of William Colby, the former CIA director. Is that actually true?
As far as I've been able to find out, yeah, that is true. He was given a pair of boots. He was approached by Colby for making a documentary about his life. This was in 76. And when they met, he was given these pair of boots, and Bob Marley was very much into, he liked being very fit and good, well-dressed, and he loved boots. So when he was given them, he was really happy. And when he pulled on one of the boots, people who were there said that he just shouted, "Ow!" and pulled off the boot. And inside the boot, there was a small piece of copper wire that had punctured his big toe. And this is later the exact same toe where his cancer started. And this is one of the ways that the CIA and other agencies have been assassinating people for many years with different cancer-causing chemical substances. So I think I've never heard of anyone who had a cancer in a big toe, but this is what he died from in the end.
You know, the first time I heard about the CIA assassination of Bob Marley was by way of fiction. I read a short story by Bruce Sterling, the cyberpunk author, entitled We See Things Differently. And it's a wonderful alternate history story which plays off of the Bob Marley assassination by the CIA. But it's set in a near future world in which the U.S. has been colonized by a rising Islamic world. And so now the new global empire is run by Muslims from the Middle East, and the U.S. is a sort of third world backwater that provides raw materials to them. And there's an American singer who's kind of the American equivalent of Bob Marley, who is leading a sort of a nationalist uprising in the U.S. against this global empire that's run by Muslims. And so the Muslims send over an assassin to get him. it's a great, great story, and you can get it free online. Just Google We See Things Differently by Bruce Sterling. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Highly recommended. You'd enjoy it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and like I said, that was the first I'd ever heard of this. And so I read this story and said, you know, I can see that he's referencing, you know, what he thinks was the assassination of Bob Marley by the CIA. I've got to check this out. So I did a little research, and sure enough, it looked kind of suspicious. Well, what are some of the other rock stars who may have been assassinated by these people?
Well, one of them that I know for sure is John Lennon. If we go back in time, in the early 1960s, it was even the late 1950s, where President Dwight Eisenhower, he wanted to get together a small group of assassins that he could use as a weapon against foreign leaders. And he gave his vice president, Richard Nixon, the task of putting this team together. It was formed as a group called Operation 40. And in this group, which consisted of around 40 highly skilled assassins, most of them exiled Cubans, but also with CIA operators, they were trained to be used on a global scale to hit different people like political leaders or whoever they wanted to get rid of. They just sent this team out. And this team had been extremely active over many, many years. They went under the name of Operation 40 to start with, but they changed names over the years. But this group has been extremely deeply involved in the JFK assassination. They were, parts of this group were at the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was taken out. There were some of them were at location when Martin Luther King was taken care of. There were one of them or two of them were there when Che Guevara was tracked down and killed in Bolivia. They were the Watergate burglars. The Watergate burglars were consisted of these people with some CIA. And also, one of the highest officers in this group for almost 10 years, his name was José Perdomo. And on the day, the evening when John Lennon was shot at the Dakota building in New York, that very evening, the doorman was this José Perdomo. And when you hear the official story...
Wait a minute. The doorman was a member of Operation 40?
Yep.
What's he doing working as a doorman?
Well, you tell me. It's a very good question. Officially, he was dead in 1974, but he was the one who was working as a doorman at the Dakota building that evening, and he was identified right away by some of the first articles that was written and so on, and also TV news clips. But he disappears very, very early on, and is just described as the doorman. He's the guy who they say went over to Mark Chapman, the guy who was sentenced for the assassination. A lone crazy guy, which is typical when they do these assassinations, that they blame it on a lone patsy. But he's the guy who they say ran over and got the gun from Chapman, screaming, "My God, do you know what you've done? You just shot Lennon." And then he was standing there waiting until the police came and grabbed Chapman and so on. Then he disappeared very quickly. But I find it very, very odd that this highly skilled assassin was working as a doorman on that specific evening. Also, officially, if you look at the crime scene, Mark Chapman was standing to the right when Yoko Ono and John Lennon came. Yoko Ono left the limo first and started walking into the building, and then John Lennon followed 5-6 meters after her. And Mark Chapman was standing hand side when 5 shots were fired. Four shots that hit John Lennon hit him from the left. It hit his shoulder and down his chest and so on, but straight from the left, not from the right. And on the left-hand side is where this doorman, there's a guard booth outside to the left, exactly where José Perdomo was supposed to be. But actually, it seems like he was standing there's an elevator shaft a little bit or an entrance to an elevator a little further in where at the entrance where you go into the building to the left hand side, and it seems like he was standing there.
Wow, that's pretty mind-boggling. And it's also mind-boggling that they think they can get away with planting a known top-level CIA-linked assassin as the doorman at Lennon's building, who is right there when he gets shot, and get away with it.
No, but can I just say, you say a well-known top assassin. He was absolutely not well-known. these names have just been, it's thanks to investigators or private people like myself who have spent years and years and years and years trying to track them down and identify them, that now their names have been sort of public knowledge. Because for many, many years, these were very, very secret people with lots of different identities and so on. So highly known is a wrong way of putting it.
I guess infamous at this point, thanks to researchers like you, would be a better word. And with Lenin, it seems like the timing was a little odd for his assassination, because the impact that he had really was so powerful, but it came much earlier. As I recall, he came to the U.S. after the Beatles broke up in kind of around 1970 or shortly thereafter, and engaged in a lot of very strong peace activism and other radical activity. He and Yoko together were, you know, two of the greatest political artists the world has ever seen, and they were a huge force in energizing the peace movement and the movement for social change. But then, you know, he kind of eased off on that activism, and it had been years since he was really strongly activist when he got shot. So I guess one question that arises is, if they were going to kill him, why did they take so long?
Because he was just about to do his big comeback. He had just recorded the first album in years and years, and he had planned for a big peace tour where he was going to go around the country and get people to get in the peace mode, to get out of this whole war scene. And so it's like you say, he was a peace profile that many, many people listened to. And because of this, he was a big danger for this. So they took him out when he was just about to do his comeback. There are other theories, though, that might be important to mention as well, because this is something I'm not totally sure about myself, but there is a theory where, and this is corroborated by former MI6 agents and so on who have come forward, explaining that the whole Beatles, the group Beatles, were a creation by the Tavistock Institute. I'm sorry, I got a bit of a fever, so if I speak a bit strange, I hope that's okay.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people would think what you're saying is pretty strange, whether or not you had a fever. But unfortunately, I think there's a fair bit of evidence to back it up.
And that this group was actually a creation, where the whole intention with the group was to destabilize the English and Western world American society, going from, I mean, they sort of shocked the world with their haircut, if you see that, in 1963. And 1969, the whole flower power movement and all the drugs, everything, that's only 5-6 years. So it was, they had a massive impact on the world. And there are these theories saying that this group was a manufacture of the Tavistock Institute, and with the intention of doing exactly this. And one of the other theories that goes together with this was that he wanted to go forward with this information, telling that this was what happened, because there's another big question mark around the identity of Paul McCartney. I don't know if this is too far out to discuss on this program.
Well, no, I'd love to hear it. I mean, I of course, when people try to make fun of stupid conspiracy theories, one of the first things they come up with is the stories that were going around among banana peel smoking young people in the 60s, that if you played the right Beatles record backwards, you could hear the chant, "Paul is dead, Paul is dead." So, well, yeah, tell us, what's the real scoop about Paul McCartney?
The real scoop, as far as I've been able to find out, and I mean, I've tried for many, many years to be as serious and precise as possible, and there's a lot of fact showing that this guy who today goes for being Paul McCartney is not the real one, because if you look at his features and all the whole structure of his face and so on, it is not identical to the one who was there before 1966.
Well, you know, that would explain why his music has totally sucked since the Beatles broke up, but I thought he wrote a couple of decent songs after 66.
Yeah, but this is, they had, what is said to have happened was that in 1966, in November, they were in in the studio, and Paul and John had a fallout in the early hours, and Paul left the studio very upset and jumped into his car and drove off. It was a rainy night and so on. And on the way, there was a young girl who was hitchhiking home, and he stopped and picked her up. They took off, and after a little while, suddenly she discovered who was actually driving, and she just went totally berserk and screaming, you know.
Started trying to rip his hair out and stuff, probably. That's what girls did in those days.
And that made him lose control. That made him lose control of the car, and he drove off the car and crashed it and died in that car. He even, that the girl got out, but the car afterwards took... what he told, went into flames, and he got very badly burned.
The body. This would make an incredible tabloid story. I killed Paul McCartney by ripping his hair out while he was driving. But how come we never saw that?
No, but there, if you look at it, these rumors they started very, very early on, and have been living on to this very day. And I've been in touch with several people who, plastic surgeons, who have looked into this case and compared the faces of the person before 1966 and the one afterward. And they say this is definitely not the same person. The ears, that they tried to fix it. They tried, they fixed the teeth, they tried to fix things, but there are certain things you cannot fix, like the width between the eyes, or the ears are really tricky as well. And these type of, there's some teeth missing as well, even though they try to get the ones that are there to fit in and so on. So according to these people, they say not the same person. And there is a very strange documentary about this that was released a few years ago, I think. I think it's called Paul Is Not Dead or something like that. And in it, they describe that at that, the evening when Paul McCartney is said to have died, the Beatles were, the rest of the group members were looked up by somebody from MI5 who took them to an office, and they were told what had happened, and they even saw the body of Paul and so on. So it was a very, very horrible situation. But MI5, this people from MI5, they said that we need to get the group continue as they are, because it's of such an importance to keep the group going. And at the same time, they had just there was this like an amateur competition with a lookalike competition of Paul McCartney, and there was never any winner officially claimed, but instead the guy that looked the most alike Paul McCartney is said to be the one that they took in and made him become the Paul McCartney of today.
And well, that's a pretty interesting story, but frankly it sounds a little implausible, given that, well, I mean, maybe, you know, there was all that friction between John and Paul when the Beatles broke up. Of course, maybe John was just getting tired of this darned imposter, but it just seems like it would be pretty tough to carry on that kind of acting.
I totally agree with you. Like I say, this is a theory that I cannot back up 100%. I'm still there's a lot of questions around it that I have no answers for.
I would be concerned that this is the kind of theory that gets planted by the Operation Mockingbird people, who want to make sure that when you start talking about these assassinations, most of which are true. Now you're telling this crazy story, and they can say, "Oh well, this Ole, are you going to believe him about Bob Marley and John Lennon being assassinated? He thinks that Paul McCartney wasn't dead, or was dead, or what have you."
I'm not saying I think or I don't think. I'm quoting experts that have been looking into this, and in there's some documentaries made, quite a few about this thing, and also where George Harrison, he said that John Lennon had called him just a few days before he was assassinated, saying that I've had enough of this, I'm going to go public with this, because it's been going on for way too many years. And so he was just about to do that, and that's when he got killed. Then when George Harrison, he was more or less the only one, or one of the people knowing about this as well, he was then almost assassinated in his home, if you remember. He was...
And then they put the pictures out in the mass media, and suddenly everybody starts imitating the behavior.
This is the thing, exactly like that. It was only the first ones that, the ignition to start the whole thing, that was what they did. And then from there on, it just took off on its own.
Well, that's exactly the way that Edward Bernays used to work. He invented modern advertising PR mind control techniques by applying his Uncle Sigmund's theories of the unconscious to mass manipulation. And, my favorite image from the Edward Bernays mind control story is when Bernays was hired by the cigarette manufacturers to figure out a way to get women to start smoking so they could double their profits. At that point, smoking was considered taboo among women because it was, Freud would tell you that the cigarette was probably a miniature phallic symbol or something. It was considered masculine, and women weren't supposed to do it. So what Bernays did was he paid maybe 1,000 suffragettes who were marching in a demonstration to simultaneously whip out their cigarettes and light up. And this all was filmed by the newsreels and blasted out to the American public. And suddenly, women smoking became cool. It became a statement of being an early feminist or a suffragette or a sexy woman or what have you. And like overnight, suddenly the whole female population was smoking. And it was all done by, paying a few hundred or maybe 1,000 people to stage a fake mass hysteria demonstration, very much like what you're suggesting happened with the Beatles.
I tell you, they're doing this over and over again, as far as I understood. I was in Greece once when Papandreou was, there was this big election rally for Papandreou. It was between him and Mitsotakis, the two top politicians. And I was there. I didn't really know anything about it, but I saw all these busloads that were coming. And I mean, I know just a little Greek, but I also know Bulgarian, the difference of languages. And all the people getting off the buses were speaking Bulgarian. So what was that? Where did they come from? And this was the thing, so that Papandreou had thousands and thousands and thousands of people supporters. So it was filmed by the whole world. So I thought, I'm going to wait and check out these buses. And sure enough, as soon as the rally was over, everybody on the buses again, and they just left like in a long, long, long row of buses. So I think it's how to manipulate the mind.
That's amazing. Maybe in order to really get the 9/11 truth movement going, what we need to do is find some folks with a lot of money, and then they should pay to have like a few thousand beautiful women in 9/11 truth t-shirts attack me next time I do a talk.
Smoking women.
Say smoking women in 9/11 truth t-shirts. Well, Jimmy Walter, if you want to get back in the game, we have a strategy. All right. Well, so Olya.
At the end of the program.
Yes, that's my wife's comment there. So who are some other rock stars whose mysterious deaths may have been attributed to these people? I know there are some questions about what happened to Jim Morrison, who was on the public enemies list. He was, hated and put on some list for destruction by Nixon and Hoover. But then the story of his death seems to be that most people think it was an overdose, possibly that it had to, his then wife, Pam, may have given him heroin that was way too pure in some kind of crazed sort of self-destructive episode, but I don't know. Do you think that Morrison might have been another hit?
I don't know. I know that his father was in a high position somewhere, that there's been question marks around that, but I haven't really looked into that one so much. But Jimi Hendrix is another one where I cannot say that it's connected to this, but I can say that there are very many similarities in the way he was taken out, and also how people around these cases have died very violently and mysteriously. It's almost a very clear pattern that around these cases, people will start dying of suicides or accidents or overdoses and so on. And in the case of Jimi Hendrix, it's the same thing.
Well, wasn't there a money motive? In other words, I understand that Hendrix was worth more dead than alive to certain people.
Yeah, there's the thing about his manager, Michael Jeffries, that there was insurance money on his. But according to some sources, Michael Jeffries was a former MI6 employee as well before he became a promoter. I don't know about this insurance things, but what one of the things was that he, during the last year of his life, he felt very threatened in many different situations, and he said to several of friends that next time I'm going to go home to Seattle, it's going to be in a pine box. I won't live to see to be much older. And when he died, around his death, there's some major question marks, because the official story is that he died of an overdose. But Jimi Hendrix, he was not a person who used heroin or other of these type of drugs. He was more like into LSD and more experimental drugs like this. And when he died, there's some very big question marks around a woman called Monica Danneman, who was, she claims to have been his last girlfriend. And she claims to have been there in the room, in the hotel room, waking up, and he was dying in his own vomit and calling the ambulance and being there when the ambulance came and then going with the ambulance to the hospital and so on. But when you interview the people, the staff of the ambulances, they said she was nowhere near to found. They got a strange phone call just saying, there's a dead guy in this hotel room, go get them. So they went there and they went into this hotel room, the door was open, and there was this dead body of a black male that they took to the hospital. He was dead on arrival, but when they were treating the body or handling it, there was lots of red wine coming out the nose and the mouth, and I mean, we're talking lots. And the people who were involved of taking care of him claims that he was actually drowned in red wine, that because the alcohol level in his blood was very, very low, and so because the wine, the alcohol amount had not gone into the blood veins, it was just in his lungs. Absolute. I mean, somebody must have held him down and just filled him with red wine, you know, pumped it.
So it's sort of like waterboarding with red wine.
Exactly, wine but boarding. With red wine, exactly, and like Michael Jeffries, his manager, why he was taken out, I think, was that he was not so long before he died, he was really starting to contact with the Black Panthers and to stand up for the Black Panther movement, the violent way of fighting back oppression and so on.
Well, wow, can you imagine Jimi Hendrix touring the world, putting on huge benefit concerts for the Black Panthers?
Well, there you go. Yeah, no, but really. And he was, Jimi Hendrix, at that time, most people don't remember the times, really, I think, because the differences between black and white were still so strong, you know, they're so big, and he was the first black rock musician that was really making a massive impact in the world. So once again, people were starting to listen to this guy, and this, when people start to listen, this is a problem for them, a massive problem. So But when it came to Mike Jeffries, he made a fortune after Jimmy died. But then he died in a very strange accident, a mid-air collision in France, where the plane went down. It crashed in two planes crashed into each other over France and went down. And Monica Daneman, who kept changing her story again and again and again, there were so many different variations of what had happened, where it seems like that she was, I don't know if she got him into the position and then in this hotel room and then left the room while he was taken care of. And then afterwards claimed that she was there when and found him dying and so on. It never made any sense. Then she was in, I think it was in 1996, she was taken to court by another girlfriend of Jimi Hendrix, where they were fighting some different things in the Jimi Hendrix case. And it was being, she was started to being approached with more questions from the media around Jimi Hendrix's death. And then 2 days after the trial, she was found dead in a garage where she had officially committed suicide by taking a hose of the extortion pipe and then a hose inside the car and killed herself. It's wow. It just smells bad, you know, because it's like, if this is only one case where these things happen, okay, fine. But when you see it in the hundreds almost, when you look into these assassinations on a global scale, the same pattern repeats itself. And this looks very much like it again, I would say.
So how about Tupac? That's one of the big pop star assassination conspiracy theories, quote unquote, going around in this generation.
I know. Once again, we're into thin ice area. I don't know enough to really say. I can just say that there's a lot of very strange things around that, because when you look at the photos from the crime scene, for instance, the car that was supposed to be shot in, the different photos and the video footage of it shows different car models. It's not the same car from the different angles. And there's a lot of rumors going on that Tupac is still alive and that he's been seen alive in many different... I don't know. I do not know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw a documentary on that, and it made a case that, as in the case with Jimi Hendrix, there were some big money people who could make more money off him dead than alive, and also he was causing trouble, like Jimi Hendrix, you know, getting out of control, supporting radical causes, and all the usual stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, it's getting to the point that when a really highly charismatic pop star who's pushing any kind of radical message dies suddenly, that it's almost like we should make the other side prove that it wasn't an assassination, because it's the pattern is looking pretty clear at this point. Well, Ole, I want to keep this interview short enough so we can play a little bit of music from some of these great performers and to do a little tribute to them. It does seem that, in a sense, this, you know, if this is Operation 40, the CIA-linked program that's going around killing these people, they have pretty good taste, because the people they're killing are the really special people, the people with real charisma. You know, it's almost an honor to be taken out by these guys. Man, this is like putting you in the seventh circle of Jinnah as a demigod of you know, immense proportions in a spiritual next world, to be selected and honored by these cretins for assassination. Something to aspire to, I guess, for any young musicians. Well, thank you, Ole Damokart. It's been great, as always. I appreciate your terrific work, and I do hope to have you back, because I think you're connecting some dots that need to be connected, and you're doing it really well. So keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Can I just say my website is www.lightonconspiracies.com. And I've got a book called Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, which shows the links between the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, all the links going with many of these major assassinations, including the sinking of MS Estonia, which killed almost 1,000 people, all of them connected and carried out by more or less the same people. It is this book, Coup d'etat in Slow Motion. It's coming out in December now here, and will be available on Amazon and many of the other major online bookstores.
Okay, coup d'etat in slow motion. And once again, your website is lightonconspiracies.com. All right, well, thank you, Ole Damegaard. You're doing great work. Keep it up.
Thank you. I'm just sorry with this fever because I don't feel really focused, but I hope that you were able to make sense of what I was saying.
No, it's actually a very good interview. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
If he was a soldier man, shooting gooks in Vietnam. If he was the CIA, selling dope and making hay. He'd be free, they'd let him be, breathing air like you and me. They gave him 10 for 2. What else can Judge Columba do? We got to set him free.
A little older, the unknown soul.